Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I trust NCX. They've helped over 20,000 landowners across America earn more than $20 million through programs like carbon credits, wildlife habitat enhancement, solar energy development, sustainable timber management, and more. Want to see what your land could be earning? Visit ncx.com and discover the funding opportunities available to you. And as a Great Days Outdoors listener, you get your first month of NCX membership free. Just use the code GREAT at checkout and unlock the potential of your land today. Again, that's the code GREAT at ncx.com. Air Medcare. Would your insurance cover an air ambulance in a medical emergency? The fact is, insurance often doesn't cover the full cost of medical flights, leaving you and your loved ones at financial risk. But with an Air Medcare Network membership, you can focus on recovery and not on finances should the unexpected happen. Air Medcare takes care of everything, with no costs for flights only when flown by one of our providers. Membership covers your full household and starts at $99 a year. Visit gdo.deals/airmedcare to enroll. Texas Hunter. Since 1954, Texas Hunter Products has produced the best engineered and finest quality feeders and hunting blinds in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality and durability. By sticking to premium standards, the company delivers tough, long-lasting products that meet the real-life needs of anglers and hunters across America. Their fish feeders, deer feeders, hunting blinds, and outdoor accessories are among the highest rated in the industry. You can trust that your purchase from Texas Hunter Products will meet your needs for generations to come. To learn more, visit TexasHunter.com. I'm your host, Joe Baia, here today with Butch Theory and Nick Williams. Guys, I don't know about you. Right now, my mind, it's hard to work. I'm just thinking about deer.
Oh, yeah. Cameras are blowing up. Big bucks running everywhere.
Yeah.
Cold.
It's peaking out. I mean, as we record this, I don't know when we'll publish it, but as we record this, it's January 9th, and I mean, it is a switch flipped with this last cold front, and I'm starting to see mature bucks all of a sudden. I was seeing lots of young bucks chasing does.
Bucks I haven't seen before.
All of a sudden, it's like, oh, that's a big deer. And then big deer, big every night, every morning. It's time to get up there. It's time to not be recording podcasts.
Yeah, actually, as soon as we get done with this, I'm going. So
yeah,
I was going to say, it's gotten to the point of the season where I'm scared to check on my cameras because I'm going to be here working and I'm going to get the text update and he's going to be sitting there 20 yards from my tree stand. So I had three nice ones cruise through last night and one of them I had not seen before. So it's definitely prime time.
It's getting right. On.
You know, I was coming back from the camp this past weekend and my brother and I, you know, he'd been up there hunting with me and we just were scheming. You know, we kind of need to move this tree stand a little bit, or we're actually, you know, we need to take this tree stand from this spot and we need to put it there. And we were making our plan and I've been starting to get together a kind of a tradition with my brother and his family where we go up right after deer season, late winter, and we just do a bunch of the stuff that we know needs to get done. And hopefully we can get it done before it gets hot. You know, we get the firewood collected and the tree stands adjusted and move shooting houses if that needs to happen. Spend a little time on the gun range if you know, we didn't want to shoot up the property during deer season. Okay, let's check some guns. Let's mess around with some guns. You know, maybe go do a little nighttime hog hunting or.
Yeah, that's a nice bonus.
Yeah, do a little squirrel hunting, late season squirrel hunting. One of the things that I've got going on at my property is we're getting ready to plant longleafs. Are y'all doing any planting this winter, Butch?
Yes, sir, we are. I think we have about 105 acres that we're going to have to replant.
Yeah. You know,
pine tree seedlings.
I was really pleased this year. I'm going to be able to cost share that. Total expense there for me is going to be zero other than going through the application process. I was able to get funded through NRCS EQIP program, one of our show sponsors, NCX. Natural Capital Exchange. If you go through them, one of the cool things that's been eye-opening to me as a landowner is the fact that there's so much cost-share money out there because this is a public benefit. You planting longleafs on your property, you thinning your forest. I mean, there's money out there for
bad habitat. That's what I was going to say. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you never even think of.
You never even think of. And in a lot of cases, and this is not smoke and mirrors, but in a lot of cases, the money that's out there to help you do things is stuff you want to do anyway. You know, yep. I mean, there's money
prescribed
out there
for
prescribed fire, for crop tree release. You know, so if you've got that big white oak out there and you want to go cut out all those sweet gums and hickories and everything that are drawing resources away from that white oak, and what's that going to help it do? It's going to help it produce more acorns next year. Great spot to bow hunt. Well, there's money out there for that. All you got to do is go check out Natural Capital Exchange and put in your property, and you can see what all programs you're eligible for. It's really, really cool. Really, really, really cool. And it helps a lot. That stuff's expensive. You know, reforestation is expensive. Fire breaks.
Well, like you say, it's stuff that you're going to do anyways. You're not just making things up to do this. It's stuff that, you know, replanting. You got to replant your pine trees once you cut them.
Well, and unfortunately, a lot of landowners don't. You know, a lot of landowners, they get that money from that timber and they're like, I don't have the money to replant. You know, that's why they cut the trees in the first place. This can be that
supplement,
you know, that supplement to help you treat the land the way you really want to treat it and the way it needs to be treated. Another thing that I'm looking forward to for February, early March, you know, that's another time where I always go up post deer season and I start trapping, trying to make a dent in my raccoon populations, my possum populations, and get ready for turkey nesting season. And, you know, you're never going to trap a population out. I'm not trying to kill them all, and they're going to filter back in. But if you can make a dent, and that's been proven, if you can make a dent on them on your property going into nesting season, that can really help your nesting success rates with turkeys.
Oh, man. I think my place is a good example of that. I mean, we started trapping pretty heavy 2 or 3 years ago, and I cannot even tell you how many turkeys we have this year. I mean, it's exponential. I mean, last year we were like, man, it's a lot of turkeys. This is helping. And this year it's like, wow, we really, really have a lot of turkeys. So it's definitely making a big difference.
The only thing I don't like about trapping is that, you know, I'm a weekend warrior like a lot of guys. I get up there. Yeah. Maybe I get up on a Friday. We go run the trap line, get everything set out. You kind of don't have that much time. And if you don't have that much time to check, you know, it can be –
You don't want to leave them out, you know.
Yeah, you can't leave them out and all that.
And round them up at the end of the weekend and all that. You can only do what you can do, though.
Yep. And I have really enjoyed, too, you know, with my younger boys, I want to get them in the driver's seat as much as I can. They're both getting to that age where they like going hunting with daddy, but I can kind of see that, like, they want to do something. They're ready to quit being spectators, but they're not. My rule is if you can drag it, you can shoot it. And neither of them can drag a deer. We're not deer hunting yet, but, you know, small game. And the focus of today's podcast, those nest predators, is raccoons. What can we do? What can we go to the camp this winter and be proactive about from a hunting perspective? Is it realistic to think you could actually make a dent in raccoons by hunting them? Well, I've seen some videos recently of calling raccoons, and this just looks like an absolute riot, not to mention very
effective.
You're
doing something good for your property. Yeah,
It looks to be very effective. So I'm considering doing this winter, and I wanted to get the scoop on it. Nick, who are we talking to today? You set this one up, and this is going to be a fun one.
I did not even know that you could call in a raccoon. I have never heard of such, so I'm excited today.
We're going to be talking today with Jeff Nemnick. He's a champion coyote caller and caller of other critters. We've seen him in some YouTube videos chasing some raccoons. Jeff, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, great to be on here with you guys. I guess, anything coyote related really is what I do have for, you know, many, many years. Raccoons is kind of a side of that, right? You know, they're a predator that needs controlled as well. So over the years, we've killed a lot of raccoons, which is what we're going to talk about. But primarily, I'm a coyote guy. You know, kill anywhere from 300 to 400 coyotes a season.
Wow.
Travel all over, filming for The Last Stand. I do in-person coyote schools, do a podcast of my own. If you're interested in a predator-only type podcast, you can check out Eastman's Predator Pros podcast. But yeah, just really, that's the extent of what I do. I actually own a lawn care business. I've owned that for about 2 decades. That basically allowed me to have the winters off so I could chase coyotes around the country, you know, kill a lot of them and get really good at it in a short amount of time. So here we are.
Very cool.
That's an incredible amount of of coyote killing.
Yeah.
Need to have you to my property.
No doubt. Let you go. Just let you reign.
You know, that's something I've always wondered. Y'all, what you see the I'm not a predator hunter, so to speak. I'm not a varmint hunter, so to speak. But you see varmint rifles and predator rifles, and it's obviously its thing in and of itself, right? And what is it about, before we get into the raccoons, what is it about predator hunting that is addictive for some people? Because I'm a turkey guy. Like
Yeah.
turkeys, they've got a hold of me, and I see these other folks that coyotes have got a hold of them. Is it a Western thing mostly, or are there guys in the East that are just as fired up about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think popularity is growing, especially in your guys' neck of the woods, you know, south the southeast, where your coyote numbers are ever increasing, right? You know,
Definitely.
30, 40 years ago, you talked to some old time guys and coyotes weren't really a thing, you know. They've always been a thing out west, but you know, it's increasing in popularity. You know, for I guess the way I look at it, everybody has their own little thing, right? Like you said, turkeys is your thing that really gets you fired up. And I think just some guys like myself, coyotes was it. You know, for me personally, there were several things that I really liked. I'd hunted everything. I've hunted, you name it, I've hunted it. And 20 years ago, I used to hunt a lot of everything, and there just got to a point where, to me, calling coyotes and killing coyotes was the most challenging of anything that I did, which made it that much more rewarding for me. The other big factor for me was the style of hunting. I don't have a lot of patience. Most coyote hunters don't. So sitting in a blind for hours, you know, sitting in a tree stand for hours, that does not appeal to me at all. You know, sitting in a duck blind for half a day, it doesn't, you know, it's just, I've done it, but it just doesn't get it, you know. So the way you hunt coyotes, the way you hunt predators, you know, you're actively pursuing them. It's a lot of moving. It's a lot of covering ground. You're not sitting there very long. You're actively going after them, trying to outsmart them, you know, set up stands, manipulate stands so that you can, you know, get coyotes killed. And then the biggest part of it too, I mean, I like to kill stuff, man. I mean, I like to shoot. I like to, you know, and when I'd have a deer tag in my pocket, I found myself really not ever wanting to shoot a deer, because then I thought to myself, man, as soon as I pull the trigger and shoot this deer, my hunt's done.
Over with, right?
You know, and with coyotes, I can shoot as many as I want and I can hunt as long as I want. And there's no end unless I just end it myself. So
Yeah.
that's always been the appeal to me. And now with the thermal game becoming so popular, especially in the East and the Southeast, really everywhere, I guess. That's opened up even more time for guys to hunt, right? The predator seasons are year round in most states. If not, they're ex super long seasons, and you can hunt them day, night now. It doesn't matter. So it really opens up the amount of time guys can go hunting, which is what we all want to do, right? We all want to
Right.
hunt as
That's
much
right.
as we can. So yeah, I think that's the big appeal to most guys, is that it just gives them something extra to hunt that they can go do, and they could do it as much as they want.
Do you find that those same, you know, reasons is translate into calling coons and hunting coons? I mean, you've got probably pretty liberal limits and seasons, and is it similar style of hunting, that run and gun, you know, it's there for the ADD hunter?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's even less. So like, you know, if we really start, when we get into the specifics of setups and things like that for raccoon calling, it's actually less time than what you'd sit there for coyotes, you know, just due to several factors we'll talk about. But yeah, I think it's the same way. It's something that you could go out on a noon on a Sunday afternoon, you know, and you could call in and kill raccoons. You know, it doesn't have to be first light, last light. You know, you're not out there when the animals are needing to move in order to be successful. You're actually going to where the animals are, you know, which we'll talk about where to find these raccoons in the daylight, you know. So yeah, it's something, you know, calling daytime raccoons has been a thing for a long, long time. You know, probably, I don't know, 20 years ago, there were a group of guys out there that actually filmed DVDs back before YouTube and everything took over. They had a series of DVDs that was nothing but calling raccoons. And I can't remember their name. I think they're out of Missouri. So it's been something that people have done for a long time. It just really hasn't maybe come to the mainstream maybe since, you know, the last few years, especially with YouTube, where guys can actually see it being done. And we go, wow, I didn't know you could call them in the daytime,
Yeah.
you know. So
Well, if you're a
I got
turkey
it.
nut like me, I mean, calling raccoons is arguably more important than calling coyotes. I mean, coyotes do their fair share of damage, but I mean, the data suggests that coons are way worse and nest predators are way worse for turkey population. So that's what got me interested in talking about this, is the turkey, is what, you know, got me into it. What got you into it? I mean, did you get a, did you have a memorable experience? You know, like did somebody say, hey man, you got to try this? Or how'd you come into this?
You know, like I mentioned, I watched those DVDs that were out 20 years ago. I was into coyote hunting at the time, and I'd watched them, and I had tried it and had a little success. You know, I'm in Western Nebraska, so we have some river ground country. We have some ag, but we have raccoons, but not crazy amount of raccoons. It wasn't until a good buddy of mine, Rick Pollett, he actually co-hosts the Last Stand YouTube series with me. He lives in Eastern Kansas, and I started hunting with him probably, you know, 8, 9 years ago. And it wasn't until I went down with him, where they have tons of raccoons, that we would, you know, go hunt coyotes and, you know, maybe for the first 3 or 4 hours of the morning. And then, you know, maybe the wind would pick up. Maybe the coyote hunting slowed down. We weren't having as much success. And we'd say, well, let's go call some raccoons. And then we would spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours in the middle part of the day calling raccoons and just seeing some phenomenal stuff. You know, if you guys have ever watched some YouTube videos, the raccoons are pretty aggressive with the ones that do come into the call. And it's pretty entertaining, you know. So yeah, that kind of got my interest. It's not something I do all the time. I probably call raccoons that, you know, if I hunt 60, 70 days a winter, I might spend a couple partial days of that calling raccoons. So it's not something I do. I don't consider myself an expert by any means on it, but it's something I've done quite a bit over the last, you know, 8 or 10 years, especially when I'm down with Rick.
Sounds really, really cool. I admittedly am a novice with this. I really didn't even know that you could call in a coon, admittedly. I've never really seen anything on it or anything like that. But you know, if you're grunting at a buck, you're trying to let a buck know that another mature buck is in the area and he's threatened. You know, you're calling in turkeys. You obviously have a mission for that. You're trying to draw in the gobbler. Kind of lay out the scenario for me. What exactly are you trying to accomplish with the coon call, and what are you trying to mimic?
So first off, you need some sort of electronic call. You know, I run all Lucky Duck stuff. So, you know, when you buy a Lucky Duck call, whether it's Revolt or maybe you just buy a lower end call like a Riot, it'll come with a folder that'll have raccoon sounds in it. And, you know, they'll be labeled like raccoon distress number one, raccoon distress number two, raccoon fight. I mean, they'll have different names on them. Really, they all work. And I think, you know, I really don't know. You're probably keying on some instinctual aggressive nature, right? Like the raccoons hear this other raccoon in distress or this other raccoon fighting, and it's like they just have to come and check it out. You know, it's very similar to calling coyotes and things like that. You're using those same sort of instincts in those animals to get them to respond to the sound. So yeah, that's really what you're doing is they're responding to some sort of, you know,
Emotion,
distress sound that
riot,
you're making, and they're coming to check it out, you know. And you know, the thing about calling raccoons is, from a management standpoint, it's probably not the most effective. It's just like probably calling coyotes. Calling coyotes and calling raccoons, if you're really worried about really thinning out a whole bunch of that predator, is not the most efficient, right? Trapping is by far the best, right? Traps are out there 24/7. You know, when you're out there calling, whether it's coyotes or raccoons, you're only out there for a certain amount of time. And if, for whatever reason, sometimes reasons we'll probably never know, you know, sometimes they just don't come. You could be right, you know, in the right spot, right in the, they could look out of the hole at you in the tree or out of the old house or wherever it is, and sometimes they run the other way, you know. So, but I'll tell you, it's way more exciting, you know, at least to me, than running a trap line, you know.
Yeah. Well, like Joe and I were talking about in the intro, you know, we're basically weekend warriors. Our places are, you know, 2.5, 3 hours away from us, and you're just limited with your trapping abilities during that time frame. You don't want to leave them out, you know, all week whenever you're gone. So this would just be a supplement to that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, so I talk to Rick a lot. You know, he's into the deer hunting as well. So he has trail cameras and corn piles and all that kind of stuff, right? So just to give you an idea, you know, he'll have a trail cam picture with 20 raccoons on it on a corn pile, right? I don't know how far raccoons are traveling in the middle of a night. I don't think they're going miles, right? I think they're coming. They may travel a half mile, 800 yards to go find stuff. So we'll go in those exact areas where he's seen 20 raccoons on one corn pile in the last week or two, and you may call in one or two raccoons. It's not like you're going to call in them all, you know. So every raccoon's a little bit different. So, like I said, it from a management standpoint, it's great because obviously any raccoon you can thin out is great. But the way I look at it, man, if you can have that much fun going and doing it,
That's right.
that's
That's
really
a
where it's
win.
at for me, you know.
Well, like Butch said, it's not a either or. It's a both, you know,
Right.
like let's go run the
Yeah.
trap line in the morning
And
when we're
we'll call
done with
during
that.
midday or
We'll go
afternoon or
make a
whatever.
few stands and make some calls. And like I look at it too, you're talking about the ADD side of it, or the fact that you could do it middle of the day, that's great for young kids, because I don't have to get these guys up at the crack of dawn and have them out there at the coldest part of the day. I can put them out there when the sun's shining. And, with that being said, you mentioned that coyote calling is the most challenging thing that you've personally done out of all the things that you have done. Do you find that coons are cautious like coyotes can be? Like, are you going to have to play the wind, or are they going to skirt you and maybe not come in at all? Or do they just come bum rush this thing every time?
You'll see it all. I mean, when you're calling any type of predator, I think they're not cookie cutter animals, right? I mean, I think they each have their own personalities in some way, weird way. Some are just more naturally aggressive than others, whether that's the males versus the females, which isn't always the case, whether it's the older ones versus the younger ones, which isn't always the case. There's really no rhyme or reason to it. I mean, when you're calling raccoons, you're using this distress of the coyote fight. You would think that the biggest, meanest, oldest raccoons would be the ones that would come just running in wanting to fight, right?
Sure.
That does happen, but every now and then you'll have just the littlest, dinkiest, little baby raccoon come running in, and you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Same with coyotes, right? There's no rhyme or reason to it. So yeah, everyone's a little bit different. So really what all you can do when you're making these setups is you try to throw these sounds out there that might appeal to the biggest variety of types of raccoons that are out there. And if they show up, great. If they don't, you pack up and you move on. I mean, that's the great thing about it. You're not sitting there all day just hoping that a raccoon's going to show up.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break. Check out a few of this week's great sponsors.
Farm Credit of Northwest Florida. Do you dream of living the country lifestyle? Farm Credit of Northwest Florida can make it happen. As a member-owned financial cooperative, they provide rural-friendly loan products for recreational property, agriculture, timber, home construction, improvements, and refinances. Their knowledgeable team is passionate about helping you achieve your dream to live, work, or play in the country. Farm Credit of Northwest Florida. More than a lender, they're your trusted partner. Visit them at gorural.net. 157 Outfitters operates out of southeastern Wyoming, utilizing 100% private leases. They offer hunts for waterfowl, pronghorn, whitetail deer, mule deer, turkey, and elk. Their area is world-renowned as possibly the most consistent quality waterfowl hunting in the United States. For their deer, antelope, and turkey hunts, they are unique in the ability that they can draw a license for you and get you hunting within 1 year. Hunts are operated out of two lodges on the banks of the North Platte River. Firearms, ammo, and a private chef can all be arranged prior to your arrival. Reserve your spot today at 157outfitters.com. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are a lot of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails, and recreational sites, 25 state parks, and wildlife management areas too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. Going back to what Butch was saying, when I go turkey hunting and I'm calling to a turkey, I'm trying to interpret what I'm hearing from that turkey, and then I'm trying to paint a picture for him of what's going on just around the corner that he can't see. There's this hen over there and she's scratching in the leaves feeding, and she doesn't care anything about him, right? I'm just over here minding my own business, and you can come if you want. I don't really care. But I'm kind of disinterested a lot of times. But then at the right time, if he's disinterested and she's disinterested, well, maybe that's a good time to get a gobble and gobble at him. And all of a sudden he goes, well, I wasn't interested until I thought she was going to get carried off by this other gobbler. And that's what makes him break. And he comes in, And so that to me is what is so fun about turkey hunting, is
it's like
you're
a chess
interacting
game.
And it's a chess game, and you really do have to understand the animal. When you're calling coons, are you always using a distress call or a fighting call? Like, what are the different calls that you're going to use? And is there a scenario where the distress call didn't do it for him, but the fighting call does?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, a lot of times there's no rhyme or reason. I mean, that's really the sounds that I've ever played. I've never played like a bird in distress, right? And had a raccoon come running in. It's always been some sort of coyote or raccoon sound, whether it's the raccoon puppy distress, which is just young raccoons. You know, obviously their sound is a little squeakier, a little more squealing in it, or the raccoon fights, which is like a lot of just, growling and just, just gnarly kind of sounding stuff. That's really all I'll play. It sounds gnarly when you play a raccoon distress sound or a raccoon fight on an electronic call. It's like kind of eerie. It's pretty nasty. It's all I've ever used, not to say that there might not be some other sounds that you could use, but really, yeah, the raccoon distress or some sort of raccoon fight are the two that I use. And so, yeah, like when I'm on stand, I'm going to play them all, right? You never know. There may be that raccoon in that old house right there, and you start playing the raccoon distress. Yeah, like you said with the turkey, that did trip his trigger, right? So let's throw something else out there. Let's go to the raccoon fight, and that may be the sound that triggers whatever in that little brain of that raccoon to make him want to say, okay, I'm going to come check this out, and here he
Need to
comes.
play a corn feeder sprinkle sound down in the southeast, I
That
think.
obviously works at my place. If you want to back up, we could actually start a little bit about the sky. Like, what are we looking for, right? You got to start with, where are we even going first before we even worry about setting up and calling? I mean, like, what are we looking for, right?
Yeah,
Other than.
absolutely. Like that's my really the should be the first question is we've got, I'll use my property as example. I got about 200 acres that we hunt on that we've got, access to, and we've got it's about 60% pines, 40% hardwoods, a couple of creeks running through it. Obviously, I feel like those coons are going to be using those hardwood areas, those creeks, and I know that they've got den trees in those hardwoods, right? So like I know that about my property. Maybe somebody else is, your mileage is going to vary depending on who's listening. But you mentioned an old house, and that was one of the things I saw, on your YouTube channel. Y'all were calling around, old farmhouses and things like that. So take me
That's my
through
favorite, man.
the
When they
various
come out of the chimney and you
places.
dump them down back in there, or they step out, they come up into the window of the front door and you just tip them over back into the living room,
Oh man. So yeah, what are you looking for? Like what are you gonna do to pick a stand?
So specifically, there's a few things you can specifically look for. A old abandoned decrepit houses, barns, all that kind of stuff. Anything that's run down, windows knocked out of it, holes in the roof, places to where the raccoons can get up in there. That's where they're gonna spend their daytime, right? They're gonna get up in the rafters, under the floors, wherever that's where they're sleeping basically for the day. That's the first spot, probably the most obvious spot if you find something like that. Another place you can specifically look for to find them is like brush piles. If a farmer cleared a whole bunch of trees and logs and he's made a big burn pile, but he has never burned it, those raccoons will burrow down into there, and that's where they'll be sleeping for the day. So you can specifically target those burn piles. And then the other one, which isn't quite as noticeable sometimes, are den trees, right? I suppose down in your country, it's probably big oak trees. Would that be what you guys have?
Predominantly,
Big oak trees with the hole, you might specifically see a hole right up in the tree, right? And it's like, okay, that's pretty obvious. There could be a raccoon in there. Sometimes it's not as obvious. There might be a big broke off branch, maybe a dead tree that has a hollow opening in it. You can't quite see it. But really just looking, the bigger the tree, the better, right? The bigger the tree is, the more chance it has some sort of hollowness in it.
Big
Those are really the,
hardwoods. Yeah, I mean, like we there's a white oak on my place that you can't tell it has a hole in it, but I've watched coons climb it and get up. It's so big that they're able to get up in there and you can't see it, but just bigger. Seems like the bigger hardwoods, older hardwoods, nastier, trashier hardwoods have more of those den holes in them.
Oh, 100%, 100%. So those are really the three specific things you can look for. Now, other times we've called raccoons where we'll get down on a creek bottom, like you talked about, that runs through your property. Really nothing specific, right? There's no old house, there's no brush pile, there's a few scattered big trees in there, but nothing real specific. You can almost blanket a creek bottom like that with just a series of stands, maybe going, making a stand and then walking up the creek another 200 yards or 150 yards and making another stand, because we know they're in there somewhere, right? We just don't know. They could be burrowed up under a root ball in the cut bank of the creek. I mean, something as simple as that. It's not obvious to see, there could be a tree that maybe it's not a big tree. Maybe it is a small tree, but for some reason it has a little hole in it and they're in there and we just don't see it. So yeah, that's really the two methods really is either find something very specific, like the three things we talked about, or just get into an area that has raccoon traffic in it and just make a series, like I call it carpet bomb, you know, that area with a series of stands through there, because we don't really know where they're at. We know they're in there somewhere. So
yeah, I'm starting to see a picture now. I get it a little bit.
So,
more.
Yeah.
When we get to these areas, like you said, you're going to make raccoon sounds. It's not necessarily like I would imagine, like with coyote hunting, sometimes you're making coyote sounds. Sometimes you're making maybe a rabbit in distress,
yeah,
or something
afraid of
along
stress.
those
Yeah.
lines. We're making coon sounds. So we need to have that worked out. And you mentioned, you know, maybe 150, 200 yards between stand sites. That brings to my mind the question of volume. So, you know, like with, again, I go back to turkey hunting, but with turkeys, it's not always about like, saying it's about saying the right thing at the right time, and it doesn't have to be super loud. Like a lot of times it's about getting yourself in the right position and then making something that's believable. So if you're calling too loud, that can actually be unbelievable to my way of thinking. So when it comes to coons, are you blasting it as loud as you can and hoping they can hear it as far as they can, or do you feel like they're only going to come, you know, 100 yards or at most, so there's no sense in blaring this out past where they'd hear it further than that?
Yeah, so this is probably the thing that probably confuses guys that go try raccoon hunting the most, because right what you said, right? A, raccoons are not coming from very far, right? They're not like a coyote. They're not going to run in from 500, 600, 700 yards away. Every raccoon I've seen come from 100 yards tops, if that, right? So if you were thinking about that, I've never done this, you'd say, well, if they're not coming from very far, then I don't need to play the call very loud. But it's if for raccoon calling, it's almost opposite of that. You want it as loud as possible. I don't know if it's almost like it just pisses them off more, right? Like when it's super loud, like, and
Gotta
it
go
just,
check this out. What's happening over there?
you know. So with that being said, so let's say we find a spot, right? Let's say we have an old abandoned house and we want to go call that, right? The cool thing about raccoon calling is I pull right up into usually the farmyard with our pickup. You know, yeah, we're quiet, kind of getting out. Are we like ninja quiet? No, not really, you know. But we are gonna get the wind right. All right. Raccoons don't use their nose as much as a coyote will, but they will if they're coming down out of the house or out of the tree and they do smell you, they will turn around a lot of times and run off. So yeah, it's easy enough. Like if I pull in and the wind's blowing from right to left from the house, I'm gonna just walk around the farmyard and I'm gonna get to where the wind's blowing basically from the house right to where I'm sitting. Okay. And I'm going to get really close, right? Whether you're calling a brush pile, an old abandoned house, a big specific tree that you know, I'm going to put the call probably anywhere from 10 to 30 yards from where I think the raccoons are. So super close. All right. And then I'm going to set up. I mean, if you watch some of our last stand videos, I mean, we purposely put the call right at our feet sometimes just to see how close we can get to things, you know, just to make it interesting, I guess. You know, but you may set it right out in the little opening there, and then you may tuck back into the brush. I mean, hiding is not, it is somewhat important, but not near as important as especially turkey hunting or calling coyotes. I don't think their eyesight is super great, you know. So yeah, usually we'll just set the call out there, you know, if we set it 15 yards from the old house. And you can kind of look too, like when you start looking at old abandoned buildings, just you can take a quick look and kind of get an idea of where, if the raccoon is in there, where is it going to come out from, right?
Sure.
Is there a big hole in the roof, right? Well, if you walk around that building and there's only one hole in the roof on this side, I probably want to be on the side of that where I can see that hole, because not every raccoon's going to come running to the call. Some of them come out and look around, and then that's a matter of still just shooting them, right? Or is the front door busted open and that's the only opening into the house? Well, I want to make sure I can see that, because they're going to come right out of the front door, you know, when they come out of there. So that's kind of stuff you'll look at to make sure you have shooting lanes and different things to those. Because sometimes, like I mentioned, they'll just jump up in a window sometimes and look out at you, and you know, you can tip them off back into the living room there, you know, if you want. But so you got to be able to see that kind of stuff. Same with the dentry, you know, if you see a specific hole, I like to be able to see that hole to where I set up, just because sometimes they come out right there. They may just peek out. They might not come all the way out. And then you can still have a shot if they don't make it all the way out.
You mentioned they're peeking peeking out, like they're kind of checking it out. Do you need any kind of visual aid? Like, do I need to wear a coonskin cap and
A raccoon hat.
wave it
Yeah,
around?
there you go.
A
There you
raccoon
go.
decoy. Right.
No, yeah. I mean, you could wear a Santa suit out there if you wanted to, when you're calling raccoons. I don't think it matters. They're not going to see you sitting over on the side waiting for them to come down out of there.
But I mean, they're going to come out and look around. I know I've seen, with various predator calling, you might have a little flicker out there, a little something just to give them to key in on a visual, and maybe that makes them commit. You could tell me more on coyotes, for example, but with coons, they're either coming or they're not.
Yeah, I mean, so if I'm running the Lucky Duck Revolt, it has a built-in decoy on the top. So when I'm calling raccoons, I'll stick a little decoy in there and I'll have it going. I think, yeah, maybe they look out and see that. I don't necessarily know if their eyesight's good enough to see that maybe from 40 or 50 yards away. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I don't know. But once they come down and commit to it, I think they see that. But I've had success both ways. I've had them slam into the e-call with no decoy on it. I've had them slam into it with the decoy going. So I don't think it's a deal breaker if you don't have a decoy on there.
Yeah. You mentioned this is a run and gun type, hunting situation. You're given a stand, removing 150 or 200 yards as we move, kind of encompassing this creek or whatever you want to, whatever you're setting up on. How long do you give a stand? How long are you calling? And you mentioned several different calls there. How long do you give a spot before you move on?
That's a good question, So, kind of we talked about every raccoon's a little bit different, right? Yeah, we're trying to key on those aggressive, raccoons that want to come down. But you'll see a variety of different things. Either the raccoon will come down out of the tree, come crawling out of the brush pile, whatever it is. If you're just calling just a timber area and you don't have anything specific, you may just be calling and all of a sudden you'll see a raccoon busting on the ground running from 50 yards out coming to the call, But you'll see other things too. You'll see raccoons that aren't that aggressive, but they'll come out on the branch of the tree and look around, and then they'll go back in their hole. You'll have raccoons that'll come down out of the tree, hit the ground, and run the other way. Just for whatever. It's like they didn't want anything to do with that fight. That's just the type of raccoon they are. I've had them where they just barely peek their head out of a hole in a tree, like not even enough where you can even shoot them hardly, So you will see it all, but. The raccoons that come that we've triggered something that you get that aggressive sprawl, it happens super fast. All right. So that's what's great about it. If it happens fast, right, we don't have to sit there very long. Either they like it or they don't. And you're going to know within a minute whether or not there's probably something in there. So to kind of lay out the scenario, let's say we walk up to this old abandoned house. We sneak in, we get set up, maybe 30, 40 yards from the house. A lot of times we'll talk about guns in here a little bit, but a lot of times we'll have one guy running a shotgun just because a raccoon running on the ground at 20, 30 yards is a hell of a lot easier to kill with a shotgun than it is with a scoped rifle. And then we'll usually have somebody sitting there with some sort of rifle in case you do get those raccoons that just peek out or something like that, then they can shoot those.
Snipe them.
Yeah, you snipe them, right? So you set up, I walk out, I sneak out, I set the call maybe 15 yards right in front of the front door, pointed right at the house. I walk back another 15 yards. We set up. I fire up the call. I run it up to max volume and I hit raccoon distress number two. And it just starts, going crazy. I'll let it play for about a minute and a half. And at that point, because sometimes, usually, especially like old houses stuff, there's probably other little outbuildings and other little things around there where the raccoons could be there too. So it's not always. If you target an old house like that, it's not to say that you may look off to the side and there may be a raccoon coming from 50 yards over here that was in the little shack that was over here, So yeah, about a minute and a half with that first sound. And then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna try one more sound. I'll switch to maybe now a raccoon fight. And I just go right into it. Just stop the first one, hit play on the second one, just rah, rah, right into it. And sometimes, a minute into that second sound, well, here will come the raccoon. And for whatever reason, he didn't like the first sound and he liked this one better. And here he came, But then after about 3 minutes, 4 minutes tops, there's nothing here, man. Or they're here, they
Moving
don't want to
on.
come in. So boom, pause, pack it up, on to the next spot. That's how easy it is.
After seeing these coons come in and attack the call on video, it doesn't really make me want to do this, but I'm going to ask anyway. Have you tried this at night? I mean, obviously, coons are going to be, more active at night. Some people have night vision goodies that they can use, or just using a light, is another option too. But Have you tried this at night, or would you recommend against that just because it might be harder to see them coming?
If you have a good thermal, I mean, we call in a lot of rep. We just got done filming some thermal episodes in Kansas. Well, in Kansas, you cannot shoot raccoons at night with a thermal, but we call in lots of raccoons. There's a certain sound when we're coyote hunting. There's a sound I like to play. It's called coyote coon fight. So it's a raccoon distress overlaid with like a coyote pup distress almost, right? And all the time at night, we have raccoons come running into that. So yeah, you could see them easier up in the trees, right? I mean, at night with a thermal, you can, because you'll see them up in the trees at night too. It's not that they're always running around on the ground. So yeah, I mean, if you could kill raccoons at night and you're able to use thermal, you could thin them out way easier. But just because you can see them so easy, right, with the thermal, oh, you can get on a little field edge and be like, okay, there's three raccoons up in that tree. Let's walk 100 yards over there. Get over to the tree and boom, boom, boom. You could whack them out of there. You could try calling them first. And if they didn't come running over, you just pack up and walk over there and shoot them, you know? So with a thermal, you could mop up raccoons a lot easier for sure.
Man, that sounds fun. You mentioned you like to have a couple different calibers. You mentioned a shotgun and a rifle. What's your go-to if you have, two or three people? What are you going to have everybody using?
Well, first off, shotgun. I mean, that's the thing about, especially if you take kids, this is what I think. If you just wanted to go do something fun with kids to get them excited about something, raccoon calling is definitely it. It's going to take some planning on your part, obviously, right? Whether you jump on Onyx or Hunt Stand, whatever you use, and you go through and drop pins on, whether you're out, turkey hunting and you come across and you look up and you're like, oh wow, ooh, that's a good dentry. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to pull out Onyx, boom, drop a pin on that tree. This is stuff we don't normally look at, right? You know, guys, I don't really focus on, like, when I see an old abandoned house, right? Because it means nothing to me when I'm turkey hunting or coyote hunting, right? But as you start to pay attention, I say, oh man, and you drop a pin there and you drop a pin there and you start to find these spots. And then before you know it, you pull up your phone and you got 20 or 30 spots. Well, now you can lay out a good 4 or 5 hour hunt. You pack the kids up and you say, okay, when are you going to run the shotgun? Whether it's a little 410 or 20 gauge, it doesn't matter. I mean, they're going to, when the raccoon's at 10 feet,
Right,
just
if
don't
they
shoot the
hit it, it's
call.
going to, yeah, just don't
That's
shoot the
right.
call because it has happened, but I mean, you don't need anything special, man. We shoot them with dove loads. I mean, we get crazy sometimes and shoot them with like 3-inch BB out of that. If you watch that one particular Last Stand video, when it's we're shooting, Rick's just like, I'm gonna put the call right at my feet, and he has this old Stagecoach 12 gauge double barrel with hammers on it, and he's trying to shoot him right. I mean, he's shooting these raccoons so close, it's blowing the wad out through the other side of them. I mean, that's how, I mean, it's just, it's pretty devastating to say the least. But that was just us being, let's see how close we can get these things to,
Right.
right? But if you were just set up with your 12, get whatever, you set the call at 10 yards. I mean, you shoot them with whatever you got, it's going to kill them. And same with rifles, whether you have 22 long rifles, a little on the less end. I mean, you got to hit a raccoon right in the head usually to kill it with a 22 long rifle. So, we shoot them with our coyote rifles, whether it's 223s, 243s, 22-250s, whatever. 50 yards, the raccoon peeks his head out the living room window. You whack them with that gun, it kills them. They're pretty stout animals, but yeah,
If arrows,
no, nothing specific.
if arrows weren't so expensive, that'd be really good bow and arrow practice.
Yeah, we filmed one. Rick was trying to shoot one with a bow the whole day, and I was just backing him up with the rifle, and he actually shot the call with an arrow one time. I mean, he finally stuck one, but he's shooting the same broadhead over and over all day, right? So it finally got dull. He finally sticks one. The raccoon freaking runs into this hole. It's dragging the arrow outside of it. It was so dull it didn't even go through it. But I've seen him pin him to the ground, like, with an arrow, and it just goes right through them. So yeah, I mean, it's just you could get as creative as you wanted to be. We've shot them with pistols. The last one we filmed last season, we thought, let's have a little competition, see who can kill one closest to the call with this 22 pistol. So we sat down on the ground and put the call right at the end of our feet, and to see, it's basically like a, it looks like a little mini grizzly bear charging you, right, when they're coming right at you the way they run. And I think I shot one about 5 feet, 6 feet out in front of me. I missed him on the first shot, but then got him in the head on the second one. But that, so yeah, the sky's the limit, man, is in regards to how much fun you want to have trying this.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors, Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metal Works and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. Bucks Island Marine. At BucksIsland.com, you can check out the full list of inventory from new and used bass, pontoon, and bow rider style boats, new and used motors, as well as kayaks. They love trade-ins, which provides a steady stream of used boats, and they can rig your boat at their 18-bay service department or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians, so visit them at 4500 Highway 77 in Southside, Alabama, or give them a call at 256-442-2588.
Jeff, so when Joe first mentioned this to me, and he was like, hey, have you ever heard, do you know anything about coon calling? And I said, well, yeah, I've been coon hunting a few times with some guys down here. You know, they do the whole thing, hunt them at night, run them with dogs, yeah, and tree them. And I've watched them, though. You'll get this big mockernut hickory, and you're out there dark in the swamp, and it's foggy, and the dog's treed, and you walk up, and you don't see anything. And I was looking one night, and the guy that I was hunting with, next thing you know, he reaches in his pocket, and he blows one of those mouth squallers that about made me jump out of my skin. I didn't know what had happened. I just hear this racket next to me. And, you know, sure enough, it made the raccoon pop his head out, and we shot it, and the dogs got it. And that's what I had in my mind for coon calling, was those mouth squallers. And he explained to me, he said, no, e-callers. And you've talked about the e-callers, and I've looked at them several times off and on through my hunting career and thought about picking them up to try, you know, coyotes. We got foxes, bobcats. The coon thing is interesting to me, but I've seen with those e-callers, I've seen $50 ones, I've seen $500 ones. So that's always kind of put me off on buying them, because it's like, well, I don't know. Like, is a $50 caller as good as a $500 one, or do you need to drop at least $200 or $300 on them? What's your thoughts? Like, you sound like you have way more experience with e-callers than most people. What do you look for when you go and you pick out a caller?
I mean, e-call is just like anything, right? I mean, a $50 e-call is not the same as a $500, you know, no different than a $200 scope's not the same as a $2,000 scope, you know, and vice versa, just across the hunting world, you know. Really, it's just a matter of features that you continue to get and upgrade with, you know, as you go up in price. Big thing is probably speaker volume and speaker quality is something that you definitely see a big increase in with the increase in price compared to like a $150 e-call versus a $450 e-call. Remote features, you know, we talked about remotes are a huge part of e-calling and why it's so much more efficient than the old school hand calling, because now I'm able to get the sound out away from it. Like calling these raccoons, right? Maybe you want them coming right at you. Maybe you don't. But if you're blowing a hand, you can buy actual hand call coon squallers. That's probably what he had. You know, if you're blowing that, guess what they're coming for? They're coming for the sound, right? And if you're sitting right where the sound's at, well, you might not want that. Well, the great thing about an e-call with a remote is I can put it wherever I want, and I can sit wherever I want, and then I can kind of funnel animals out to where they're going to shoot them. So the remote capabilities is another one. Obviously, you know, $150 e-call, the remote's not going to be real great versus a $600. The remotes are going to get better range, better features on the remote, you know, backlit buttons if you're a night hunter. I mean, just the fanciness of it will go up. The amount of sounds on there usually go up. If you buy a low-end e-call, it might come with 10 or 15, 20 sounds, right? And it'll have a big variety of about everything, but you only have one or two of each type of sound. You know, you go with a $400 or $500 e-call, it comes with 100, 150, 200 sounds. Now you have just a lot more variety of different sounds that you can try for whatever it is you're hunting. That's probably the biggest thing is those handful of things that I just talked about.
Nick, what I'm hearing Jeff say is it depends on how many times you're going to shoot it, how much you want to pay for one.
Yeah. You talk about too, you mentioned the sound library, and that's something that I've noticed is you get, the cheap ones and they're like, well, here's a crow call and here's a coyote distress call and here's a coyote howl. You got those 10 or 12 sounds. And then you see the ones with a bunch of sounds, and then you see the ones that talk about you being able to use your own sound library. Is that something you do? Is there a particular like reference source for sounds that you would send people to, or are you usually pretty happy with whatever comes stock on the machine that you buy?
Yeah, I use stock. I talked about Rick Paulette. I hunt with him in Kansas. He actually has developed the entire sound library for lucky duck predator calls. Meaning, he's raised coyotes. He's gotten the sounds from birds and rabbits and raccoons. I mean, these are all live animal recordings, and he's phenomenal at the way he can record those sounds so that when you put them on a big heavy duty speaker with an amp, it sounds real, right? It doesn't sound crackly. I mean, that's all based on the quality on how that sound was recorded. So no, I mean I use the same sounds that come on there. Rick makes a living selling sounds. I mean, he has a sound library of a couple thousand probably, and guys do like to come and buy new sounds every year when he comes out with them. I think there's a group of hunters out there that are just like anything. They want the newest stuff, right? They think, oh,
Oh,
the
yeah.
coyotes have heard all this stuff already. I want the new stuff, right? And that may be the case. I'm not so much like that. I like using the proven old stuff that seems to work year in and year out. But honestly, if you bought, let's say, a Lucky Duck Revolt call, it's going to cost you about $450. It's going to come with 100 sounds. I think the raccoon folder has four or five different raccoon sounds on it, which is going to be plenty. I mean, you're going to have all the coyote fights, the pup distresses, all the howls on there you want, rabbits, birds, rodents. I mean, it's going to have just a huge variety of all kinds of different sounds on there, which is probably more than you'll ever have a chance to probably sort through and figure out.
Sounds like too, like you'd want to definitely. There's certain things anytime you're, and I would call this show entry level. Like none of us have done this. Maybe we're going to go do it. Maybe somebody listens is going to go give it a shot. Anytime you're working in the entry level of something, the tendency is to just buy the cheapest option. But the fool's errand in that, and Nick and I have this conversation a lot, but the fool's errand in that is that if you end up not liking it or you don't want to do it anymore, there's not a good resale market for the entry level
Resale.
thing.
Yep.
But if you
Yep.
buy something that's, got all of the features that nobody wants to compromise on, then you're going to be able to pretty much get rid of that thing for just a minimal,
Yeah,
loss.
discount. Yeah.
And, you got to have the experience and see if you like something. And so it sounds like the areas you don't want to compromise on are you definitely want it to be a remote feature. You definitely want it to have a good speaker. And you're going to want this thing to be able to do double duty. You wouldn't want to buy, like, I don't even know if they make a dedicated raccoon collar, but you'd rather have there be, this is a collar that could be used for lots of different types of predators and varmints, because it seems like you guys all run together. Like, it doesn't really matter if it's a coyote or a raccoon. Like, you're going to be
Yeah, if it's out there, we're shooting it. Yeah, I mean,
right. Makes
yeah, I mean,
sense.
that's a good point. I mean, I think Lucky Duck sells 20,000 e-calls a year per se. I don't know the exact numbers on that, but half of those are going to be the $150 e-call. You're exactly right. There's a lot of entry-level guys, and they buy this, and then they find either one of two things, like you said. Either it's like, I never used it, I didn't go that much, I don't like to do it, and then they're stuck with a call that they really can't get rid of. Or they really like it a lot and they realize, damn, I should have spent the extra $200 or $300 because now that I've done it enough, I really could see the benefits of having a
Right.
louder speaker,
A remote.
the better remote. And then they end up saying, well, then they're spending the money anyway,
Yeah,
Right.
because you're not
So
gonna, if you're entry level, like if you're like me, I'm sure everybody's not, but if I'm looking at something and it's $150 for the brand new one, or I'm gonna buy somebody's used one for 110, I'll just get the brand new one. I don't have to worry about what's happened to this thing, and I can go get it, and I've got returns and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just gonna it, under a certain amount of money, I'm just gonna buy the new one. But then when you start getting up into the higher levels, it's like, well, this thing's a $500 new, maybe I found a used one for $350. Like, okay, I'll do that. So I think a lot of times it really doesn't even make sense to buy in the entry level. It seems like you're better off to go ahead and get the full featured version. And it's gonna
get a
be
lot more
anything.
options.
I mean, apply this to everything in your life, and Then, if you like it, you've got what you need. If you don't like it, you get rid of it fairly easily,
Yeah, 100%.
for minimal expense. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing about these calls too, I mean, if you buy it, if you're listening to this podcast, you say, you know what, I don't really care about calling coyotes. I just want to go do this raccoon thing. And you say, you know what, I'm going to go buy this $450 e-call just for calling raccoons. And you keep it around. I mean, that call will last you forever, right? Like if you're
Right.
using this thing a half dozen times a winter to go call raccoons, I mean, you put that thing away, the next year you pull it out. I mean, it's going to be just brand new. You're not going to abuse it. But then at some point down the road, you decide, okay, I'm going to start calling coyotes. Maybe you want to put snow goose sounds on it, right? I mean, you can use e-calls for snow goose hunting if you get into that in the spring. Maybe you're in a state where you can use, I don't know, freaking deer and turkey sounds on e-call. I know some states you can, a lot you can't, but maybe it's one of those. And these calls you can add sounds to. I mean, they all run off of MP3 sound, so you can add sounds to it in the future to cover, maybe if you're wanting to hunt something a little bit different. Hog
Sounds like
sounds is another big thing that guys get into down in your area, especially, putting hog sounds on their e-call and using it to try to call in groups of hogs across fields and stuff like that.
Yeah, when you look at like what you can do with these calls, I mean, I don't know anybody that wants to get rid of coons that doesn't want to get rid of coyotes. And most of the guys that are wanting to get rid of coyotes and
Coons
coons
and
are wanting to get
coyotes
rid
or
of
pigs.
bobcats and pigs too, we just there's we're just scratching the surface of what you
Yeah.
can do.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, people say, oh, $400, $500 for a call. I'm going, I don't know. Take your kids to a baseball game. What's that going to
Right.
cost you?
Yeah,
It's,
exactly.
we'll have a lot more fun going out for a day of calling. So it makes a lot of sense to me. Like I said, the whole reason behind this is to put a dent in these predator populations, whether it's predators, nest predators, whatever it may be. Fur trade is not there anymore. It's not happening. It used to be that that was the main population check, and I think a lot of people get the wrong idea. I had this conversation with some folks. My wife shot a real nice buck over the Christmas holiday, and she was kind of apprehensive about putting her picture online, of her with this buck. And I said, why don't you post it up, like put it on the bragging board? And she's like, I don't know, I just don't want to, bother anybody
Ruffle any
that's on there
feathers.
ruffling feathers. And I'm like, look, people have the wrong idea. We're not out there. This isn't just bloodlust. Like, it's not just some craziness like that. Like, predator populations have to remain in check. Just we fragmented the population. We fragmented the habitat. It used to be that everything was in balance, right? Because we hadn't gone in and built roads and built subdivisions and done all and put in pine plantations
That's
and
what I was going to say, pine
all the things
plantations.
that we've done to give predators an unfair advantage over prey. And when you start to manipulate one variable, you have to be aware that you, as an outdoorsman, conservationist hunter, need to be responsible for manipulating all these populations. And predators need to be kept in check. Doesn't mean we want to kill them all. Doesn't mean we want no raccoons on the property. I like raccoons. They're kind of cute, but they kill a lot of turkeys. I don't want to kill them all, but I definitely don't want them run amok. And this is just another tool in the tool belt to be able to do that, as well as if folks want to get into the other aspects of predator calling, this can be a gateway into that. So, Jeff, I know you do it
Real
all.
quick though, I'm going to a point on to that too is you're going to have guys that listen to this and you'll be like, well, that sounds fun, but they're the type of guy that doesn't want to shoot anything unless they can do something with it, right? I mean, that's a huge thing out there right now. Like, well, that sounds fun. I want to go shoot some raccoons off my property, but what am I going to do with them, right? Well, can't sell them because the fur market's so what do you do with them, right? I mean, honestly, you pitch them in a hole, right? I mean, that's what we're doing. I mean, there's nothing you could feed them to the birds. I mean, I don't know what but that's something that you have to consider as a hunter too, is, there's not always a use, right? Physical use for what you're shooting, right? I
I don't know,
mean,
Jeff, you hadn't hung around in my part of the world. Like, coon meat's not
well,
a
I don't know. I guess if somebody eat the, I mean, that's more power to them. But like, that's a serious problem I get. Well, what do you guys do with this stuff you shoot? Like, honestly, there's no fur market right now. So coyotes, raccoons, whatever, we're just shooting them. I mean, that is the reality of it, right? But there is a it's a bigger picture, right? Like, they're not being wasted. I mean, if you shoot a raccoon and leave it lay, I mean, something will eat it eventually, right? I mean, whether it's the worms or the birds, something still
It's
is eating
turning
it.
back
But
into
I mean,
soil one way or
yeah,
the
I mean,
other.
that's exactly the way it is. But you're doing a service that needs to be done, especially if you're worried about, turkey populations or whatever on your property. And if you don't care about that, then yeah, you probably aren't going to want to shoot raccoons because they're not worth anything. You're not going to be able to do anything with them. So that's something that guys will have to, every guy is going to be a little bit different, right? When it comes to how they want to kill stuff and what they want to do with it after they do.
A lot of
Yeah,
people have to
I
wrestle with
guarantee you
that, I
Hank
think.
Shaw's got a raccoon recipe.
Look, man, I'm telling you, like, go online and all you got to do is there's plenty of people that love eating raccoons. Not
Oh,
to
yeah.
mention, like, it's not just something they're doing to make use of what they've got. Like, they're seeking them out.
Oh, yeah.
It is
Well, there you go.
prized,
Find
so.
somebody like that that wants them. And you might be able to, you ask around enough too. There still are people that do fur stuff on the kind of as a hobby. And
Sure.
you might find somebody that says, hey, man, I'll just give you these raccoons and you can do what you want with them. They'd be like, oh, great. Yeah, I'll skin them and tan them and do my own thing with them. And you might be able to find somebody like that. But I tell people all the time, man, don't be afraid to go kill some coyotes or raccoons, whatever. I mean, if you have no use for them, right? I mean, you're still doing a service.
At the end of the day, like I say, if you're going to be out there manipulating prey populations, there's nothing wrong with manipulating predator populations. We've fragmented the habitat to the point where we've given them an unfair advantage. We got to keep them in check for the health of the ecosystem. It's not for the health of just the turkeys. Like, if you got too many raccoons, that's not good for raccoons either. And,
Oh yeah, nature
you
will
know,
thin them out pretty quick.
yep. Well, Jeff, like I said, I feel like this is something that may be a gateway to other things for people if they've never, dipped their toe in the world of predator hunting. Or maybe they are predator hunting and they just haven't tried raccoons yet. But regardless of what your motivations are, if people want to get more information and kind of check out the raccoon side of things, the coyote side of things, and see what you guys are doing, where can they find you guys online? They want to get on YouTube or listen to your podcast. Give everybody, where they can go and get more info.
I mean, first off, Instagram is where I'm at, just at GEOFF. Just search that. I'll probably be the first one that comes up on there. You can follow along with all the predator hunting stuff throughout the season there. If you want to see some of these last stand episodes where we do call raccoons, because during those episodes, I talk a lot about the same thing and you can actually see it and hear it and see it taking place, go to YouTube, just search The Last Stand. We're on our seventh season now. There's, I think, over 75, almost 80 episodes on there now. Not all of them are raccoons, obviously, but you can search back through and find the raccoon ones. You might find some other stuff. We actually just put out a new one that was 19 coyotes in one day that we killed down in New Mexico, which
Wow.
is a pretty exciting episode. But other than that, I actually do an online coyote school, which is just coyoteclass.com. It's got about 14 hours of instructional content on there. It's membership based, but there are specific instructional videos on there on calling raccoons as well. So that might be something you might be interested in checking out. So yeah, between all that, that's the best place to find me.
Well, I just added something to my list for my post deer season
Like I needed more hobbies.
weekends.
Nah, it sounds like a lot of fun, man. It sounds pretty low-hanging fruit. It sounds simple enough, but also sounds really, really fun. Like it sounds like something that would be beneficial for you to do on your property. Easy enough to do in between hunts or whenever you just get tired of freezing sitting in a deer stand, Sounds like something you could change it up and.
And perfect for that in between, that post deer season, pre turkey season time frame. Perfect for that. Perfect for kids too. Other than I'm not gonna put the collar at the end of their feet. I'm probably gonna
Yeah, give them a
get
little
it away from
distance.
a little bit, But no, I think it'd be perfect for them. I mean, you're talking about, well, Jeff was saying maybe 10, 15 minutes max on a stand. I can usually get my boys to sit still for half of that.
Yeah, I mean, long enough to get a couple calls out and see if something's going to come running out at you.
Yeah. What about you, Nick? What'd you learn?
I think the whole conversation, like that's something that I've struggled with off and on, is the idea of predator trapping and pest control and stuff like that, because it does, right? It goes kind of counter to the sportsman's ethos, the idea of shooting something or catching something and just letting it go to waste. But I think people need to remember, like, if you have mice in your house and you set out a mouse trap, you don't eat the mouse. Like,
Right.
you're fixing the problem, and you're not being cruel. It's not like you're going out in the wild and trying to eradicate all of the mice, but
Right.
just that mouse needs to go from that area
Right.
for your little home ecosystem to be happy. And with raccoons or any type predator, bobcats, coyotes, like, if you have too many predators, you have too many predators, and you have to solve that. and solving that, you are doing something good for the environment. And it's probably good. If it doesn't give you the warm fuzzies, that's probably good. That probably says good things about you. But just, I like that he addressed that. Like, don't get hung up on it. If they got to go, they got to go. No sense in making it any crueler than it has to be. But, like sometimes it's ugly.
Yeah.
Like you said, if the habitat is not in the state where it can self-recuperate and self-balance,
And you got to balance her out.
sometimes you got to give it a helping hand,
And with the way you shoot, I mean, you're at no risk of doing any real damage to the population anyway. So,
Yeah, that's it,
except
man.
maybe the call that he's using.
I just go back to like, this is one of those, I can see myself cheaping out on this. And I've been reminding myself not to do that. Is you go out there, you're going to go look at the market. It doesn't matter what e-collar you're looking at, you're going to find that range of prices. You probably don't need the top end, but that bottom end, I'd avoid it. I'd find something that doesn't compromise on the attributes that Jeff was talking about. And if you go out there and you have the right gear and you're uns and you don't have a good time doing it, you gave it a fair shake.
Yeah.
And you're going to be able to take that gear and go sell it to somebody who does enjoy doing it and probably get most, if not all, of your money back. Whereas if you buy the low end, you're going to just have to give that to somebody because nobody who's got their wits about them is going to want the low end thing,
Yeah.
except for the guy who doesn't know anything like you. And they're just going to go buy the new low end. So,
Yeah.
don't get caught in that trap.
Well, kind of along those same lines, I like the idea of this too, because usually new hobbies that I pick up, you got to go buy a new gun or a new rod and reel.
Right.
It's some
Yeah.
specialty stuff. This sounds like pretty low barrier to entry as far as new gear. I mean,
Right.
that's
Yep.
pretty easy.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen. So here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list. And wherever you are listening to the podcast, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.